proceed with the next case, which is the United States versus Brenda Cummings and David Morris.
May it please the court, my name is Bill Tice. Along with Cheryl Brook, I represent Mr. Morris. We'll be presenting arguments on behalf of Morris and Cummings in this case. I'm going to deal with the issue of the sufficiency of the evidence as to count two, as well as with the Blakely issues that we raised in our supplemental briefs. After the government has spoken, since the government has attacked the downward departure, Ms. Brook will address the court on the appropriateness of the downward departure that the court made in this case. Now, as to the sufficiency of the evidence, our challenge is solely to count two, the RICO count. And this is a case in which there's really no dispute about the primary facts. Those were well ventilated at trial, and nobody is disputing those facts. The real question is, given these facts, does this amount to a violation of the RICO conspiracy?
Mr. Thies, how many counts of conviction were there in this case?
There were two. The first count was for a conspiracy to commit, identity fraud. It was basically, no one was assuming anyone's identity, but using Social Security numbers, they were obtaining information about people's work relationship. And we're not challenging that conviction. And it's quite possible that they could have been convicted of state law misdemeanor counts on disclosure of confidential information, possibly even some bribery and official misconduct. And none of that is in play. The only question is whether or not this is a case where we can wheel out the 80-ton howitzer, the RICO conspiracy statute. The Supreme Court has made it quite clear in Reeves that someone, in order to violate the statute, must have some sort of direction over the enterprise. And let's be very clear, the government charged only one enterprise, and that was the Illinois Department of Employment Security. The government did not charge some sort of association in fact. It did not charge any other enterprise. It was just IDEF. So then the question is, who in this case was directing or had some control over the IDEF? The people who were accepting the money, like Ms. Cummings and Dunover and Harris, they had no direction or control over the enterprise. Now, it's true they were able to do things that Mr. Morris wanted, but that, of course, isn't the issue. The issue is whether they had direction and control over the enterprise.
Do you think this is just a simple bribery case?
Yes, I do.
And I guess you also would maintain then that if this can be maintained under RICO, then any bribery case could be that.
Yes, and that I think is the problem with the government's position, because ultimately in the reply brief, they have focused solely on the language in Reeves about bribery. And the way they're reading Reeves is that any time you bribe, you are assuming direction and control over the enterprise. But that's not true. That's not what Reeves says, and that's not what Allen out of the Second Circuit say. Instead, what they're saying is that you must not only bribe, but as a result of your bribes, assume direction and control over the enterprise. So that means you've got to be bribing someone and getting the powers that they have over the enterprise. And in this case, Cummings and Donegan and Harris, they had no direction over the enterprise. You could bribe them every day, and I think it was the government's theory and most of their proof that they were bribed every day. But that didn't mean that that Morris therefore was able to get direction and control over the enterprise. And that's what the case law stands for. The government's position goes too far. They would say any time you bribe a government official, you have therefore committed the RICO offense, and that is not the law. And they don't help anything. They don't help themselves by saying, oh, but aha, this is a RICO conspiracy, because you still got to have an agreement that you're going to facilitate someone in their exercise of direction and control over the enterprise. And once again, we come back to the only people who are even employees of the enterprise are Cummings, Dunover, and Harris, and they don't have direction and control over the enterprise. So you can give them bribes until the cows come home. You still don't get the direction and control, nor do you form an agreement with anybody to get direction and control over the enterprise.
How much direction or control would one need then? Obviously, whoever runs IDES or whatever it is, somebody in charge that knew about this, I don't know whether it would take that, or just some relatively low-level person that just has access to information by virtue of their job. They continue to do their job, I guess. Everything goes along as normal, except this private information is sold through bribes to an outsider who then uses it to enhance his own enterprise. Now, is that too far from the RICO statute to get a conviction?
That is too far from the RICO statute. And I think that bleeds into the second part of our argument, is that you've got to have some impact on the enterprise. Normally, it's a separate strand to the argument, but I think depending on how you play with them, maybe there are two different ways of saying the same thing. We have to look at what is the core mission of IDES. And the core mission is to pay unemployment insurance benefits to people who are out of work. And part of that core mission is to collect premiums from employers so that when their employees get out of work, the employees can then go to the state agency and say, I want my unemployment compensation.
Well, now, suppose is the impact on an organization, could it be the reputation or the faith of the, I guess, you got to pay your money, and you're basically a tax to pay this unemployment?
The government never charged that theory or argued that theory, the theory of reputation. This is not a case where anybody was trying to get benefits to which they were not entitled. It's not a case in which some employer was trying to shave off the amount of premiums he had to pay to a state agency. Now, it's true the agency had the information that Morris wanted, and that's why he paid the money to get it, but he wasn't doing anything to affect the core mission. And this may seem a little insensitive, but to go back to your question about reputation, it's not like employers could say, oh, we think that IDES is disreputable, so we're not going to do business. They don't have a choice.
Right.
As I said, that may seem insensitive, but in terms of the RICO analysis, that's why they're guilty of all these other offenses, but not guilty of RICO.
Would this be similar to someone at the IRS or the Department of Revenue that obviously has tax returns, and they get private information out of that and then disclose it? You still have to pay your taxes, and they go ahead, but it's that insider information that they give the outside.
It's the same thing. The outsider wants the information.
That's otherwise private.
That's otherwise private. Maybe people will think poorly of the IRS that there's some employees, not all of them, but a small number who are selling this information. But once again, people can't say, gee, I think the people at the IRS are really dishonest. I'm not going to pay my taxes. They don't have any choice.
Could Morris have set up his own conspiracy and enlisting these people, and he would be the person directing this operation?
Not given the enterprise that was charged. I don't know why the government decided to charge the enterprise as IDES. I have some suspicions, and maybe the government can enlighten us. But once they made the decision that IDES was the enterprise, then they're stuck, if you will, with the requirements of Reeves. And as I say, the separate but maybe not so separate requirement that's found in the Blackwood case, we talk about a real harm to the core functions of the agency. This is not like the court clerk who's taking a bribe. It's not like the traffic cop who's taking a bribe, where there's some effect on what the agency does, its core mission. This is information that is there. Somebody wants it. Somebody has it, but it doesn't compromise or impair the core mission of the agency. And really, in the government's reply brief, their ultimate argument is that what Morris, and I guess to a lesser extent Cummings, did by way of a conspiracy was to deprive the agency of honest services. And I know there's a lot of federal cases where we talk about honest services, but if you look at the indictment, and I went back and looked again this morning just to reassure myself, you will not find a word in there about this newfound theory. If you look at the final arguments, and I looked again this morning, you will not find a word about that newfound theory. If you look at the judge's jury instructions, and I looked at those again this morning, you won't find a word about that newfound theory.
Newfound theory being?
That somehow there was a deprivation of honest services. Yes. That's what IDS was deprived of, says the government.
As Judge Keeney was asking, what about other than IDS? Did Morris have enough of an enterprise that should have been?
There was none charged, and really when you look at the evidence, you'd be kind of hard-pressed to find that he had some enterprise going on. Okay. The enterprise was the state agency. I see I'm into rebuttal / response time, so I'd ask the court to reverse the conviction. Thank you.
Are you?
They're splitting it up. She's going to do rebuttal on this.
Oh, you're just going to do the rebuttal? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Mr. Hines. Good morning. May it please the court? I'm Assistant U.S. Attorney Stephen Hines. This is actually the second time I've appeared before this court in this case.
No, I'm new.
You are new, Your Honor. That's true. The other two judges were here back in April of 2002.
They tried to get out of it, but they couldn't.
Sure. I appeared before, after the district court, sua sponte, ordered a new trial on count two, 20 months after the jury verdict. This court reversed that decision on July 1st, 2002, and remanded the case for sentencing. And after almost another year, the judge did finally sentence the defendants, and that led to this appeal.
I know I'll learn about it on rebuttal, but again, and also in abuse, but tell me again how the sentences run and what the sentence imposed for count one and count two.
Actually, I don't know that the judge distinguished between the sentences on count one and count two. The sentences were based on count two under the RICO guidelines.
We had two counts and we only got one sentence.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I don't have that before me, and I haven't looked at that lately. I'm not sure how the court distinguished this, if she did, in fact. As far as she did apply the RICO guidelines, and then under the guidelines, looked at the bribery guidelines for the cross-reference to see whether or not that would lead to a sentence greater than the 19 offense level basic or standard level for the RICO guidelines. In the case of Mr. Morris, she found that when you looked at the different factors under the bribery guidelines, that ended up with a level of 22. As far as Ms. Cummings, she did not find any enhancements and determined that the 19 level was higher than what she would find under the bribery guidelines. One thing I'd like in addressing what Mr. Tice was just discussing with you, that is whether the evidence was sufficient to sustain the RICO conspiracy charge in this case, is that the standard of review in this case on those points is the plain error standard. The defendants did not make this argument on a timely basis. They did in fact move for a judgment of acquittal at the close of the government's case and after the verdict, but the only argument that they made on a timely basis in support of those motions was a claim that the evidence didn't show that Morris had acted knowingly. They did not make, on a timely basis, the arguments that they're making in this appeal now.
Well, what about the sufficiency of the evidence? And we've had sentencing now is there something limiting about our previous order to as far as reviewing the sufficiency of the evidence?
The previous order didn't address the sufficiency of the evidence at all, Your Honor.
So that is before us, then?
It is before you, but I'm just saying that they did not raise that issue on a timely basis in the district court, so that the standard of review at this point is the plain error standard of review. As far as the argument that there was insufficient evidence to show control or management or operating the enterprise, the Supreme Court in Reeves made it very clear that RICO liability is not limited to upper management. Furthermore, they said that it does not require significant control. It's clear that the enterprise can be operated by lower-rung participants as well as someone at the very top of an agency. Moreover, and this addresses a question that a couple of you asked, I believe, the enterprise may be operated or managed by others associated with the enterprise who exert control over it, for example, by bribery. That's a quote from the Supreme Court in Reeves.
Was that charged?
It's not spelled out, Judge. That sort of thing is not required to be spelled out in the indictment.
Don't you have to describe the enterprise?
To my knowledge, there's nothing that would require something in the indictment spelling out.
When you charge somebody under RICO, you do not have to describe the enterprise that you're describing.
We did describe the enterprise. The enterprise is described in the indictment as counsel said, the Illinois Department of Employment Security. That is
the. That was the enterprise.
Yes, sir.
Well, then nobody outside that department could have managed it, could they?
No, that's not true. Under Reeves, under the Supreme Court, the court has said that others associated with the enterprise who exert control over it, for example, through bribery, can operate or control it.
But you're talking about controlling the enterprise that you've described as being the organization they work for.
No, what I'm saying, Judge, is
isn't that what you said the enterprise was?
The enterprise was the Illinois Department of
Employment. Control of the enterprise is what's significant for the purposes of RICO.
That is true.
Well, you have not described anything that they outside can do to control that enterprise. It didn't interfere with their collection of data, or their distribution of the benefits, or the collection of the money that went to the benefits.
No,
that's the purpose of the organization.
That's true. But another part of their job in the organization is to maintain the confidentiality of the information that they work with as a matter of
that's their, part of their mission?
Yes, Judge. In fact,
no, it's what they said they should do. Let me put it in a different context. Supposing an employer decided he wanted to find out whether his employees had criminal records and contacted the police. Those records are confidential as well, are they not?
Yes, they are.
And supposing some policeman gave him that information, or several policemen, in return for which he gave them money. Would that be a RICO violation?
It might well be.
You're consistent anyway. Interesting.
We try to be. Again, Judge, I don't think that, I mean, if you read the Supreme Court decision in Reeves, it talks about control or operation.
Well, I know what Reeves said.
Okay, yeah. Other than by someone who works within the enterprise.
Yeah.
And that's what we have in this case.
Yeah. Well, I could see Morris operating something illegal and using that for purposes, but that would be a description of something else, some other enterprise, not the enterprise that these people were working for. That is, if the control of collecting this information affected the police department, then I see your argument. But it doesn't affect the police department.
Well, in this case, Morris's bribes to the three employees of IDES
got information to him,
yes,
which he used for whatever purpose he did, but
exactly.
Didn't interfere with that, with the operation you described as the enterprise.
That interfered with the operation of the enterprise.
How?
To the extent that the it is important for this enterprise.
No. How?
By interfering with their duty to maintain the confidentiality of this information.
That doesn't interfere with it.
It does. They violated that duty as a result of his bribing them.
Yeah, but that is not the primary mission. Their mission is to collect the money and pay other stuff.
I agree with you that
That's the discrimination.
That's
confidentiality doesn't mean they're violating the purpose of the organization itself, any more than the police department gets falls apart because some cop is passing out information he shouldn't.
Judge, it is important for this agency to function that they maintain the confidentiality of this information. That's really the reason why all these employers throughout the state of Illinois.
No, they're doing it because the government says you have to do it.
Well, they have to do it, but they also have to maintain the confidentiality of this information so that they can do this.
If the employer and employee had released that information, would that have violated their program?
I'm sorry,
if either the employer paying the money into the organization or the employee receiving the benefits had described what was happening. Would that be a violation of the internal work of this enterprise?
If they had paid bribes?
No. If they had disclosed this information, for bribes or otherwise.
If they on their own
yep.
disclosed the information, I don't think that would be.
So it isn't the distribution of the information that interferes with the enterprise. What is it?
It's the disclosure of the information by the employer that you just talked about doesn't have a duty the way that these employees do to maintain the confidentiality of the information. If an employer wanted to tell other people, you know, how many employees it has and who they are and how much money they have,
well, it might be a violation of some internal rule of the agency that might lead to their firing, and it might even, I guess, be a violation of some state rule, assuming there is one on the subject.
In this case, there certainly is. There's a state law making it illegal for the employees.
Well, there's a state law against taking bribes too.
Yes, there is, and that was.
But that doesn't make it a RICO violation.
No, not alone. But it did because of the relationship to the enterprise and their violating their confidentiality in response to these bribes that they got.
Well, isn't the purpose of the RICO to, meaning that they kind of control an enterprise for a purpose other than what that enterprise is ostensibly supposed to do, to, I don't know what, sell drugs or do something else. Here, IDES is going along and doing all the things it usually does, except it has three employees who are taking money on the side to give out information that they, in the line of their duty, obtain, and they just pass that on to someone. Other than this lack of confidence, which I guess would happen, where once it's exposed, the public will have less confidence and maybe try to throw the politician out who's in charge or something like that, there isn't. It doesn't change the IDES as far as its operation does. We just have a bribe, and that I guess it can a simple bribe be enough to ignite a RICO.
I think in this case it's
without changing the operation of the enterprise.
See, I guess I just agree with the premise that it does affect the operation of the enterprise in how they're performing their duties. These people were working, the evidence showed at trial that these people were using the computers to get, you know, of the company to get into the agency to get the records. They were doing it at times for hours on end, again, when they were supposed to be doing their regular job duties. It does have, you know, and this goes to the second point, it does have an effect on the enterprise, on how the enterprise is, or the agency is being run, and it does in fact not only violate the agency's internal rules about confidentiality, but the state law, and it affects how these employees are carrying out their duties as far as not disclosing this wage and employer information.
So they're using company time and equipment.
Absolutely.
To do something other than what they were hired to do.
There's no question. Yes, that's what they were doing. Again, week in, week out for hours at a time, many days.
So there are hours lost to IDES because they were doing this sidetrack and using equipment that IDES that they wouldn't otherwise use or do.
That's correct.
They're doing this as a special purpose, you're saying.
Yes. If Your Honor would like, I'll address briefly the government's cross appeal, our challenge to the downward departure.
Counsel, I guess let me ask you again, and I think you already indicated, if I read sentencing on multiple counts of conviction, there may be a problem in lumping this all under one. Did you explore that?
Judge, I'm sorry.
That's guideline 5G1.2.
If you'd like, I'd be glad to look at that
after. It may be perfectly proper in this case because it's just alternative.
Yeah. So I did not look at that recently. And in fact, it's been quite a while since we were looking at those issues. As you know, notice the statement of the case in this case is much longer than in the typical case. And just to read it is to see how unusual the procedural history of this case is. It shows clearly that the district court went to great lengths over a period of over 3 years trying to treat these defendants leniently or reduce their sentences in one way. And she did that by...
She missed an earlier an opportunity. All she had to do was say she had a reasonable doubt and that her not guilty, and that would have been the end of that.
That's true, Judge. And I, frankly, I'm not trying to suggest I know why the judge did what the judge did over this long period of time. But the fact is, on many occasions, the judge, sua sponte, raised issues that none of the parties had, including the issues that you're hearing today. Those are things that the judge first came up with a year or 2 years after the jury verdict in this case. And frankly, that's one reason why a lot of these issues weren't really addressed more directly to the jury or in the trial of the case, because they weren't raised at that point. But even after this court in the summer of 2002 reversed the judge's sua sponte new trial order, the court did not immediately follow the court's mandate to sentence the defendants. Instead, the court set a briefing schedule for even more motions, and she candidly said that was to help her maybe justify what she had done, because she made it clear what she wanted to do. When those motions after the remand were fully briefed, she didn't address them at that point or rule on them. Instead, at that point, several months later, she decided to appoint the Federal Defender Program to come in as additional counsel, although no request by the defendants had been made for such a thing. And that led to a new round of additional motions. You know, she finally sentenced the defendants more than 3 years after the verdict in this case. But in doing so, she gave them both very large departures from the guidelines that the government feels are improper, but also just need to be viewed or evaluated in the context of what all happened in this case. As far as the first departure that she applied to both defendants, she said that this was she gave a four-level departure based on her view that this was outside the heartland of RICO. Again, as the government has explained, there are a large number of ways to violate RICO. It's hard to say exactly what the typical RICO case is, but certainly a bribery and official misconduct case is a common type of RICO case. The various reasons that she offered are not supported by the facts in this case. She said they didn't seize control of the agency. Well, it's not a requirement to be in the heartland of RICO that you actually seize control of an agency or an enterprise. She described this as not especially innocuous, but the fact is the evidence showed that for several years, week after week, these people violated the privacy of thousands of people. They abused their position in the government agency, and they profited substantially from this. She made a comment that the information was not available to the public. That is not supported by anything in the record. And in counsel's reply brief, they make a citation to the testimony of one of Mr. Morris's clients who ran a debt collection agency. And I submit to you that quotation, or they don't quote it, they just cite it to a page in the transcript of his testimony. And that mischaracterizes his testimony, because what this man said on the stand is he had his own internal people who tried to track down debtors, and they used various types of publicly available information. But when he had people that he couldn't track down through them, then he went to people like David Morris. And he testified he didn't know where Morris got his information, and he didn't really care where he got his information. But his own people that went through the normal channels of publicly available information sometimes couldn't do the trick, and that's when he went to Morris. And Morris, in turn, went to Brenda Cummings and the other two IDES employees.
You got to wrap it up. Your red light's on here.
I do. If you have any other questions for me, I'll be glad to answer those at this point. Otherwise, I'll stand on what's been submitted in the brief.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
I guess Ms. Brooks.
No.
Right? Well, your rebuttal's rather bad for it.
We have, I'm going to start by trying to just clarify a few of your questions, if I can. The primary mission of IBES actually is in the transcript and was given by a Mr. Ravain, who was a high-level employee, government called him. He said there are three missions. The mission was unemployment insurance, job creation programs, and collection of labor statistics. So I think all three of you, honors, are correct that this disclosure of information that was disclosed did not go to any of those three core purposes. He said nothing about confidentiality, and I have to say, it's assumed that every business that keeps records keep those records confidential, we would expand the scope of RICO far beyond anything that this court would allow, which takes me to the Fitzgerald case, which even yet today the government has not acknowledged exists, although it is this court's case, where this court in Fitzgerald versus Chrysler Corporation gave a framework for determining what was within or without the, there it was called the prototypical RICO offense. And one of the reasons for this court doing that was because, and I want to quote this, because it just confirms what you all just said, read literally, RICO would encompass every fraud case against a corporation, provided only that a pattern of fraud and some use of the mails or telecommunications to further the fraud were shown. That really is where we are at here in terms of the sufficiency of the evidence as to RICO. The fact that they may, the evidence showed that they did spend a number of hours, and the evidence did show that, finding this information and disclosing it, does not show the converse of that, which is whether or not they got the job done. They may all have had jobs that took 2 hours to complete and nothing to do for the rest of the day. I don't know that for a fact. There's nothing.
We're back to the courts again, Ms. Brooks. You're describing a judge. Go ahead.
I am not going there, Judge. So, there is no way to determine what effect there was on the agency because there's no evidence of that. And this idea that using the time and effort is now the effect on the agency is a brand new theory. That was never presented below anywhere to the jury. I'm watching the lights. I want to take 2 minutes, if that's what I have left.
Orange usually means one. I don't know what your...
All right, I'll take 1 minute. It's a yellow light. And talk just about the departure. The judge spent a great deal of time, which the government points out, thinking about the departure, and she came up with, by my count, 7 factual findings to support the departure. Each one of them tied clearly to the facts of the record. I'm not going to go through them, except I want to talk about just 3 of them. One goes to the confidentiality of the information disclosed, which not just the judge, but also the probation officer pointed out in Ms. Cummings' pre-sentence report was not confidential in the sense that we usually think about that information, not sensitive. It included an employer name, an employer address, an employer phone number, and sometimes some quarterly wages. It did not include somebody's entire financial history or medical history. The other 2 points, and then I will sit down, I promise.
I have 1 question I want to ask.
Okay, I'd rather do that.
Did you have a chance to look at the sentencing guidelines, and is this one of the cases where they can be just lumped together and sentenced?
You know, Judge, from my brief reading of 5G, I believe because they coalesce into the higher sentence that that is permissible, but I would be happy to do a brief bit of research and submit something.
I appreciate it, with just my information, at both sides.
Okay, I'd be happy to do that. On the confidentiality of the information, if there are people who are a little more computer savvy than me, they can get a lot of people's employers and salaries. I think my salary and your salary are actually somewhere in the internet. And finally,
ours is published in every record known to man, as near
true.
As I can
and,
tell.
And every testimony in front of Congress.
Right.
And frequently so, exaggerated.
So, and she pointed out, importantly in her findings of fact, that none of the information went to a core function of IDES. All of which caused her to say, using the Fitzgerald framework, that the actions in this case, if they constituted RICO, which for sentencing purposes she said they did, were so far beyond the heartland that they required the various departures that she made, which were tied to the guidelines. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Thanks to both, all counsel. Case will be taken under advisement.